God willing, I printed a different handout for next Sunday, feeling that with today's message, I would be able to move on. But when I came to this section of Scripture a few months ago, I also came to a conclusion I would move on and just skip it and go on over to the third chapter. God's plan was certainly different than mine. We've been 20-some messages trying to get across the fact that God can get fed up and that you haven't got some kind of margin that you can maybe unfed up God before His wrath hits you in the next life. No, His wrath starts right now when He gets fed up. And I was going to skip over that wrath part and all those lists of sins between the 24th and the 32nd verse of the first chapter, which I think my congregation probably can figure out by just reading the passage themselves. And I've been here trying to make the point that what is being said as a reaction of God to simply not hearing His message in the creation, if there is a God, He calls the terms of the relationship. He doesn't have to save anybody. If there is a God, He's not on trial. He can do whatever He wants. Thanks be to God, He's revealed to be the kind of God that He is, full of grace and love and faithful. But He has said, from His view, He left enough tracks in the creation that if you would apply the mind He gave you to what is there, you ought to, at the very least, recognize His supreme being and live with an awareness of it and be thankful. Now, failure to do that with no cue other than the creation, He turns His wrath loose on you. Now, He takes out of you a sense capacity which He put in all men, which is the capacity to see. In other words, from God's view, and He's not about to subject Himself to proof. From God's view, and God sees the heart. Everything is against this backdrop. If He is, He is. If He is as He says He is and as He wants to be. You cannot fool Him. Well, now, I'm looking from the outside looking in, and it seems to me like that God ought to give these people a little more chance. Individual by individual, He knows. I cannot tell you, it's like the unpardonable sin. I cannot tell you which act crosses you over the line or me over the line. But God is saying in these verses that men ought to have known that He put something in us that the creation itself is sufficient. And failure to recognize from that minimum cue, this requires a maker. This requires intelligent design. Failure to do that is to get His wrath. And oh, You mean, I still got some questions that I think deserve an answer. Well, up yours. Up yours. And I'm not saying that. God knows when the question is honest and when it's perverse. When that the root, as he says, when the root is, I don't want to submit to a Creator who's Lord and Master. I want to ungod my life or shape him into a less troublesome God that I can approve. If he is, that's the whole issue. I've told you. I lost my faith. I came back from a study of the resurrection. Once I crossed that hurdle, I knew a God who could do that, I want to be on his side. But the point I've been driving home is if God would be this tough on those who do not recognize him based simply on the creation, how much more will he be intolerant of those that have been bathed, not only in this general revelation, but in special revelation? Oh, I'm not like them. Where do I get to the first verse of chapter 2? Wherein you judge another, you're guilty yourself. Now, I've camped out for one reason. This is a church that's luxuriated. Plutocrats in Revelation. God doesn't like to be trifled with. And the knowledge you have, as the second chapter will say, God will judge you as he will everybody on the knowledge you have. But the point he's making is that creation itself is talking. That's enough knowledge. Except to a pervert who wants to be God himself and have his words worshiped and want their name blessed, and God can see through the smoke screen. And I've been spending these days, hopefully in the minds of honest people, annihilating the so-called integrity of evolutionists. Last night I happened to look at, somebody sent me a tape, the father figure revered across this land from his days as a newscaster, Walter Cronkite. I think that Walter Cronkite is a very decent man. I wish we could trade in many modern newscasters for Walter Cronkite. I just think he's a perfect illustration of the delusion of the tunnel that I've been talking about. Scientism has captured the courts, has captured education, captured the courts, and captured the media. And I'm sorry I had to watch with disgust as a man greatly revered because of his fatherly ability to read cue cards and a basic human decency, totally conned. And conned in such a way that I had to cringe because of the hypocrisy being exhibited in this program. Walter Cronkite's World. It opened with a scene of a school, obviously of Christians in Africa, the children doing Sunday school type exercise songs, I used to call them, where you teach the kids to, we are climbing Jacob's ladder, and go through the motions. And he's doing the motions with them. Then, as only his revered voice can do it, I like you. He's holding a Bible. I, like you, was brought up in Sunday school and was taught these words. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, as he read from a King James. And God said, let us make man in our image. And he read through that passage. Then he closed it as only he can do. I was brought up and taught, as many of you. And here's the hypocrisy. By this program, this is evil hypocrisy. By this program, we intend no disrespect to those of you that believe this. I was brought up just as you were. In other words, you poor dummies, I am now going to share with you the light that I finally received. And he transitions into, we intend no disrespect, but evolution is a scientifically proven fact. We are descended from the animals. More or less. I don't quote that part exactly right. He may have named a particular kind. And then, this hour and 20-minute A&E program unfolds the garbage. Oh, and they try to be very objective by spending a lot of time pointing out how the Piltdown Man was a hoax, and explaining it that England didn't want to think that Africa was the cradle of civilization, and they've never really been able to pin down who was responsible for the Piltdown Man hoax. And they show old newspapers, the first Englishman, and they show these club-type insider gentlemen of that particular age gathering around this skull found in Sussex, England, near Sussex. A total fraud. The missing link that for 40 years, mind you, was touted as the missing link, the ape man, with an enlarged cranium, justifying the evolutionary idea that as the brain enlarged, man branched off, and the jaw bone of an ape. And thus, a missing link. Still ape-like, but enlarged cranium. Total fraud. Total fraud. Manufactured and planted in the gravel pit near Sussex. And I'll give Cronkite and his scientists credit. They're explaining away how that could happen. And this is proof of science's ability to police itself. However, 38 years before the 40-year hoax was uncovered, a man who visited there wrote a newspaper article, or not a newspaper, but a magazine article, in which he said, it is possible that this is a hoax. And the evidence suggests he knew it was a hoax, but it was not gentlemanly to call these prestigious scientists liars like I am. And they rationalized their evil by saying, well, the current theory, in order for evolution to work, the current theory required that with time, the cranium get larger, and man start walking erect, And there's still the genetic traits of the ape there because mutations are now enlarging the brain, which gives the superior capacity. And the chin hasn't yet changed. And we have a missing link. Dubois, I read about him. I told you about him. He went to Java to find the missing link. He found the Java man. To his dying day, though some say he ultimately relented and said it was a Gabon, no, to his dying day, he felt he had found the missing link, the ape man between apes and man. And he died a bitter old man because he could not convince the world. The Java man, he also found a Wasak man that he hid under his floor because he contradicted his theory. The Java man cannot be an ancestor to man. If man was living, hominoids, modern type, was living contemporaneous with the Java man and before. Same letters I wrote on the board the last two Sundays. You can't say C descended from A through B and then find some C's down here before A. Sorry. Your grandmother cannot be before you. I mean, she cannot be your grandmother and then you be before her. Say it the way I should have said it. I mean, if you open a grave 10,000 years from now, and I'm in sedimentary rocks 1,000 years before my grandpa graves, he obviously wasn't my grandparent. I mean, something happened. We're living a life in reverse or something. I produced him. God forbid. Rather than he produced me. He, Dubois himself, hid the Wajak man because it countered his theory of the Java man I showed you a couple of weeks ago. It's made up of a piece of a skull and a femur bone. Femur bone. And now we find several other bones that they were found in different locations. So that was also fraudulent in the sense that the two bones did not belong to the same person or being. I've been over this ground with you so much, I just want to drop some names. Salinka expedition. A group of more than a dozen scientists went to the site of the Java man, the so-called Salinka expedition, and when they finished with the Salinka expedition, they wrote a report. I can just say it in a sentence. Absolutely proving that the Java man and modern Homo sapiens existed contemporaneously and at the same time. No possibility of the Java man or anyone like him being an ancestor. Yet you'll still find textbooks that are saying the Java man is an ancestor. Lucy. I've showed you pictures of Lucy. Lucy, over 2 million and a half years to 2.5 million years old, depending on their various dating methods, all of which are wrong. And been proven, as I've talked to you closely, and I'm watching the clock, unreliable, because I'm heading to a certain point. The dating methods are alleged to be accurate and foolproof. They're not. Have you been here often enough to be convinced that they're not? They are suggestive, and they always tell us that it's an absolute fact. They never report, for example, in the very area where some of the so-called ancestors of man are. The scatter and the argon dating techniques started out from 200 million years ago, but then the major scattering is between 500,000 and 17.5 million. And they reject all of the dates that the scientific system produces that do not fit their already predisposed and accepted theory of what the sequence has to be. And remember in one message, they throw out the dating methods because it's impossible for a human ancestor, a true humanoid, to have lived, because that puts him later or earlier in the tree than the so-called ancestor. Again, I'm sorry, I cannot have lived before my granddad and him be my granddad. That isn't complicated, is it? But the Laetoli footprints and the canopy elbow, names you don't have to memorize, take modern human by their own dating techniques back to 4.5 million years ago, before any of the so-called ancestors. And it's the same. The Tuong skull, all of these were in Walter Cronkite's world. Dart finds a skull, fossilized the Tuong child. It became the missing link for a while, until they discovered that it was in areas that were only 75,000 years ago. And they got hominoids much later, much earlier than that. So it goes out the window. Then they found Lucy, and they quit sort of promoting the Tuong skull. Of course, all of these, the Tuong skull and everyone, were in Cronkite's world. I don't know if you ever saw that program, but that's, they were laying out the proof. The Neanderthals. A Frenchman didn't believe in them, so he drew the pictures of stooped and hairy. And then they came up with the theory that they were bloodthirsty, brutal beaters of people, because they found big knob bones and nothing else. So they decided that this was some human being that had died, and this was a club he used to beat people to death. Then they figured out that the Neanderthals were not as dumb. And now, though it's entered the slang of the language, any honest person knows that the Neanderthals were pure human. Sorry. You ever wonder where the discus comes from? Isn't it a sort of a senseless exercise at the Olympic Games? Here's these guys going, they throw this thing 150, 200 feet. Well, the Acheulean axe, which was a tool found, this is why the Neanderthals don't qualify as ape men. The axe was found, Cro-Magnon, most of these ancient people, Cro-Magnon, Neanderthals, they're all human. There is no ancestor. And there is no ape man that's older than the Laetolian footprints. A whole family, three of them, walking. And the Acheulean axe has always been looked at as a tool that amazes people. You'll see evolution is sitting and trying to chip one. It's unlike the discus exactly, but it's sort of pointed, and it's a very sharp-edged axe. Well, I give credit to one scientist that experimented with Olympic discus throwers with an exact replica of the axe. And when you throw it, it would spin, and 93% of the time when it came down, it would come down with the pointed edge, with the sharp edge. 75% of the time, it landed on its point. She also researched that most of these handleless axes are found in the bed of ancient lakes, which means if the Neanderthals, the Cro-Magnon, strong, powerful men used this as a hunting instrument. And interestingly enough, the Acheulean axe appears in the fossil and geological record at the same time that there's evidence of man killing large animals like elephants and rhinoceros and hippos. So her experiments confirm you can take a 100 men of a camp waiting at a water hole, launching like you see the Indians launch arrows, launching this hand axe like a discus, 200 feet, falling 75% point down, 93% razor edge down. And if they're doing it at watering holes, a lot of them will overshoot. And the ones that hit the animals on the shore are retrieved to be used again. The ones that go too far and fall in the lake are going to be part of the sediments of that lake. Whether true or not, I don't know, but I at least respect this scientist for deciding to research something and give us facts and then distinguish between the facts and her theory. And her theory is that this rather senseless thing in the Olympic Games probably dates back to a practical purpose when the thrower of the hand axe was using it to hunt and supply food to the camp of the tribe. There are some good scientists, but the evolutionists are theorists, religionists, and liars. And the reason that they had the Piltdown fraud is they wanted to find something to support their theory. And other scientists wanted such evidence to be found so bad, they were all too ready, without scrutinizing, to accept the hoax. You research the last 100 years of Nature and scientific magazines. It's like a feeding frenzy. When something is found that suggests evidence for evolution, there's a feeding frenzy of support. And when something like the Salenka expedition that disproved the Java man being anything but a man, it's buried. The man who exposed the ride of the Salenka expedition had to find it in German only, buried in a library, and there was constant resistance to its publication when he came out with it. Lucy, for example, they have pictures and statues with hands like a human being. Sorry, it's a lie, but they aren't correcting it in the textbooks. Her fingers are curved like a chimpanzee. Her fingers are curved. And these so-called australopithecines, from the Greek words for ape and southern ape and australoaparenses and all the other fancy names that they put to it, everybody has now agreed that has any objectivity in science that the australopithecines are a complete separate branch of ape-like people. No connection, no missing link. Lucy's not our predecessor. And I told you the so-called African Eve bases its mitochondrion technique of tracing back through that DNA that only passes from the woman and remains unchanged to 200,000 years ago because it's equated to the differences in DNA between us and chimpanzees, and thus is based upon the fact that we and chimpanzees sprang from the same thing, and based upon how long it took Aborigines in Australia to affect certain genetic changes. And from that assumption that's utterly without a basis, they have deduced the 200,000-year-old African Eve. Everywhere you turn, you find their liars. Everywhere you turn, you find they do not speak the truth. I've been beating that to death In order that you might understand a little more God's justification for turning on them in wrath, and look in your own spirit and soul, how many of you have been duped, conned, and lived a life assuming you're being told the truth about evolution? You've been duped and let it turn you off the track of the lordship and creatorship and the wonderful grace of God that He tolerates and has brought you to a moment that you can see the truth. But I'm going to go to some other things. I want you to see what evolution spawns. You say you're going to be arguing to the man now? No, I'm arguing to the fact. Let's examine the social and political influence of Darwinian theory in the latter half of the 19th and 20th century. The moral consequences are frightening. It's often said that in 1914, Darwin's doctrine of evolution had bred war in Europe, particularly in Germany. An expression of this belief still to be met with. 1935, a committee of psychologists representing 30 nations issued a manifesto in which it was stated that, quote, war is the necessary outcome of Darwin's theory. Oh, now you're using scare techniques. You're damn right I am. The law of evolution is formulated by Darwin. Provides an explanation of wars between nations, the only reasonable explanation known to me. To see evolutionary measures and tribal morality being applied vigorously to the affairs of a great modern nation, we must turn again to Germany of 1942. And remember, several weeks back, I pointed out to you Darwin and his bulldog Huxley and their absolute, unequivocal statements of their racism, that the savages, the third world races, were savages that needed to be exterminated. Well, you don't hear, I didn't hear, as they show a picture of Darwin and I'm looking at a man that I've respected for many years, truly have, and I can only hope that he was as duped as some of the people that were listening to me and used to believe evolution. I hope the day will come when he will pull out an evolution book before he dies and says, you know, I believe this crap, but I returned to the truth I was taught in my childhood, in the beginning God. I can only hope that will happen, but based upon what I've been preaching, when you've had the knowledge and you depart from it, God takes your sense away. And you, professing to be wise with stentorian tones, you become a moron. To see evolutionary measures and tribal morality being applied vigorously to the affairs of a great modern nation, we must turn again to Germany of 1942. We see Hitler devoutly convinced that evolution produces the only real basis for a national policy. The means he adopted to secure the destiny of his race and the people were organized slaughter, which has drenched Europe in blood. Such conduct is highly immoral as measured by every scale of ethics, yet Germany justifies it. It is consonant with tribal or evolutionary morality. Germany has reverted to the tribal past and is demonstrating to the world in their naked veracity the methods of evolution. Thus, the German Führer, as I have consistently maintained, and this is Professor of History, it's a combination of several professors, I'm quoting three or four of them at a time out of this book, Darwin's Leap of Faith, Professor of History, Columbia University, Dr. Henry Morris, Bernardi. The German Fuhrer, as I have consistently maintained, is an evolutionist. He has consciously sought to make the practice of Germany conform to the theory of evolution. Hitler saw in evolutionary theory the scientific justification for his personal views as much as social Darwinists of the 19th century did for their terrible abuses. There is no question that evolutionism was the basis of all Nazi thought from beginning to end, yet it is a remarkable phenomenon how few are aware of this fact today. In the natural sciences know nothing of evolution, the late distinguished scientist A.E. Wilder Smith cited leading existentialist psychologist Eric Fromm. There's a name most of you know. And this is from Eric Fromm. The, quote, religion of social Darwinism belongs to the most dangerous elements within the thoughts of the last century. It aids the propagation of ruthless national and racial egoism by establishing it as a moral norm. If Hitler believed in anything at all, then it was in the law of evolution which justified and sanctified his actions, and especially his cruelties. Not unexpectedly, in the biological theory of Darwin, Hitler found his most powerful weapon against traditional values. And you know, he set out to purify the race. And as I said, I think, last Sunday night in the miracle service, evolution proceeds by death. Death is the necessary means of elimination of those that have not mutated to that which must go on. Chance mutations produce someone superior, and then death must eliminate the competing genes. Death is the norm of evolution. Death is the enemy and the curse on God's creation. And death is the last enemy that the Scripture proclaims joyously Jesus overcame with his death and resurrection. Well, let's look at another one. In Italy, the fascist Mussolini ridicule the idea of ongoing peace as a barrier to the process of evolutionary advancement. Mussolini's attitude was completely dominated by evolution. In public utterances, he repeatedly used the Darwinian catchwords while he mocked at perpetual peace lest it should hinder the evolutionary process. For him, the reluctance of England to engage in war only proved the evolutionary decadence of the British Empire. Finally, Darwinism was effectively used to propagate communist ideology. Karl Marx felt his, quote, his own work to be the exact parallel of Darwin's. And he was so grateful that he wanted to dedicate a portion of Das Kapital to Darwin, who declined the honor. Marx wrote to Engels concerning the origin of species that this was the book which contains the bases in natural history for our views. The number one tenet of communism, dialectical materialism, evolutionary process, death and revolution is the necessary catalyst to move to the next level, higher up. I don't think I have to beat this to death. These are familiar terrors in the scene. I'm tired of scientists, tired of snot-nosed media, tired of judges and educators belittling what Christianity has done in the history of mankind. I'm tired of listening to a know-it-all snot on late-night television constantly mocking missionaries as though they only go over there and only do good in order that they might convert them, which to him is so terrible. He could not stand in the shadow. This impotent little wart that's so ugly he can't find a woman and looks for him all the time, and you can guess which one among many I would be talking about. Could not stand in the shadow of Albert Schweitzer. Could not pick up the toilet paper of Mother Teresa. and the thousands of others that have brought health and helped around the world. I'm tired of Christianity being blamed for things while the scientists sit on their pedestal and peddle a lie because of their unwillingness to let God be a part of their life. It's about time that they understand their theory produced today's morality. Their theory brings us on the edge of killing the aged because they're in the way. Their theory got its embryo in the practices of Nazi Germany. Their theory that says life is worth no more than the possible dice roll of a chance mutation. Their theory brought the Holocaust. Their theory brought communism. Their theory brought fascism, which is based upon some idea of a sick-minded, self-aggrandized, megalomaniac elite that no more than the rest of us, and thus will do for us what we need, as defined by them. No wonder a modern evolutionist has suggested that parents be taken away from, that children be taken away from parents who are Christians. They are so sick and so absent in facts, they must imprison a generation to feed it its moralless, lifeless product with no facts. No missing link has ever been found or will be found. But they want to parade a theory that can produce the song I quoted twice already. Since we're just mammals, then let's do it like they do on the Discovery Channel. Let us make man in our image. And in the beginning, God created, cannot be reconciled with godless evolution. And micro changes within species has never ever produced a macro jump to a new species. And it never will. Because God put in them kind after kind. I repeat, to rub it in their face, I'll lay my PhD from Stanford down along their credentials anywhere, and I was taught with a PhD to respect the truth, so much so that when I encounter a fact I have not yet seen, my mind rearranges itself with no help from me. I am tired of a generation being lied to, and these past two generations will go down in history as buying the greatest fraud ever peddled on mankind. Even worse than that of the Middle Ages. And to hell with all of them, and you will see that God is making His move as He turns them over not only to a senseless mind, He turns them over to forces they're too blind to see. I could not believe Walter Cronkite. Why didn't they just tell the story? Why they would open reading the Bible. Now, I was brought up believing this, but science has proven evolution to be a fact. Why not peddle the evolution without the blasphemy? Why bother to bring that book in there when the facts are, you who want to check, every evolutionist that's ever engaged in a debate, a public debate with a creationist, has lost it. Until now, all the evolutionary societies and scientific communities tell their members, don't engage and don't take some kind of meeting where you will be debating a creationist. Johnson's been able to break down a little bit with his position at Cal, and he's a brilliant attorney, and is able to break through in a couple of places and have a few debates. But the general stance is, don't debate creationists, because they always lose. And Johnson has won every debate he's had. They're lying to you folks. God's turned them over. They couldn't find God if he was in their pocket, because God took that capacity out of them. Warning, don't trifle with the knowledge you have. Because if God gets mad at these who react to his creation disrespectfully, not recognizing his supreme being, what do you think he's going to do to you and to me with the knowledge we have if we trifle with it? The next message, we'll have a different handout. I'll show you some further consequences as we move on in Rome. Romans. I wish I was in Rome. That's my message for today.